Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 278.
This week on the podcast, the anti-newness memo has too many words and not enough illustrations for public release, says the White House.
And Dems in Congress win tons of money for GOP priorities in a landmark budget deal.
Plus, apparently, only White House staff has to resign over abuse accusations. Anyone can still be the president. The American dream.
And the GOP's new plan to keep power is to just stop having elections to fill vacant seats.
Kansas found six teenagers, but only one woman to run for governor.
And you know your administration is shit when they're losing to North Korea at diplomacy.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
I'm back from my week of being a press darling.
Yeah, you could find Lila on the news.
On the news?
Yeah.
Only in New York City.
Hey,
only in the New York area.
That's not true, because I saw it.
That's true. On the internet, too. You could find me on the news.
That's right.
On the internet. I had to speak at a press conference.
Yeah.
Like, with all the microphones.
I know.
At a press conference.
Without a teleprompter.
Without a teleprompter. Without even notes, because it was so cold that I had notes on my phone, and I could not look at them because my hand was just too cold.
Right.
So I just had to, like, keep it in my coat and think to myself.
You needed those gloves with the fingers that let you use your touch screen.
I got really good at speaking off the top of my head because I had to do it three times that day because there were also two forums where they told me the last minute that I was speaking to the crowd.
Sure.
And I was like, oh,
yeah,
okay. So that's good news. I have my public speaking skills are back on par. I think actually doing the podcast probably is what helped me get through that.
No, you sounded great.
I used to do that when I was 22. I used to go to press conferences all the time and speak.
Yeah.
And I always tried to like have a speech written because I was so nervous. I would get my mind would just go blank.
Oh, yeah.
And this time my mind went blank, but I just kept talking, much like the podcast.
Exactly. Which is an hour of that.
Which is an hour of that. Meanwhile, update on Puerto Rico, which we got from the Olympics
opening ceremonies
of all places. So Puerto Rico oddly competes independently in the Olympics, which I've always thought was interesting.
Sure.
But go, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Do you.
Sure.
And during the Parade of Nations.
That's right.
I believe it was Katie Couric who mentioned the stat, which is that now 20% of the island has no power still.
Yeah. That's right.
Now, that's better than the 30% we last reported to you, but it's not great.
Nope.
It'd be better if 100% of the island
had
power.
Inching ever closer.
100% of California has power. You know, we had a natural disaster this year also.
That's right.
100% of Houston probably has power.
Oh, I'm sure.
They also had a natural disaster.
That's right.
It seems like Puerto Rico could be up there with those illustrious states. But nope, here we are. 20% of the island just like 5 months later.
That's right.
Remember when it was going to be the Christmas miracle that brought them power?
And then we joked that it was going to be the Valentine's miracle. Doesn't seem like it's going to be because that's Wednesday.
Exactly.
So
yeah, it doesn't even. I feel like the Easter miracle
is
our next greatest hope.
The best. Yeah.
Best option. And if you like us are obsessed with the Olympics, but also like us care more about politics than the Olympics, we are going to have an extensive Olympics discussion at the end of this podcast.
Right.
But we're not going to subject everyone to all of our thoughts on figure skating right at the top.
It always surprises me when I have talked to multiple people who are like, oh, the Olympics are starting?
That infuriates me. I am not even a sports fan, and there is nothing I care about more than the Olympics.
I know.
When the Olympics come on, it's stressful. By the end of the 2 weeks, I'm hoping it'll be over soon because I've had to devote so many hours of my life to watching sports I've never heard of.
That's right.
But
But for all you people who are in the crowd of, oh, the Olympics are going, we'll save it to the end.
Yeah, and we'll also catch you up if you want to listen.
Right, exactly.
But in politics this week, also exciting news.
Yeah.
There were two stories I feel like we could have started with. One is the massive budget deal, and one is the Democratic memo, that the anti-newness memo, as I've been calling it.
Uh-huh.
We're starting with the memo because it's gossipier.
Exactly.
It's not more important, but definitely gossipier.
Yeah.
Because the House Intelligence Committee agreed to release the memo.
They voted
unanimously to release the Democratic memo.
On
Monday. Is the rebuttal to that GOP memo that proved nothing that they released last week,
right,
as we've discussed.
Yeah.
And then, so Trump had 5 days to respond.
Yeah.
And has instead decided to send it back for further changes because it reveals he's worried about the state secrets or something.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, mostly it was just too long and he didn't want to read it.
Right, exactly. They've identified portions which it believes would create especially significant concerns for the national security and law enforcement interests.
Notice they didn't do that with the Republican memo.
I was going to say that I would believe that excuse maybe.
Mm-hmm. With a real president.
Exactly. Because you know what? These memos do run those risks.
Sure.
And like, I get that. But unfortunately for him, the FBI didn't want the Nunes memo released at all. And they remember when they claimed that they had grave concerns mm-hmm. about national security issues. But that didn't stop anybody
yeah.
in the White House from getting that out as quickly as possible. So the fact that now they're all of a sudden worried about it is more than questionable.
Yeah, I believe what you mean by all of this is you would be likely to be concerned about that if it were true.
Right.
But since concerns about national security have never once dictated the actions of this president, that's including right. the time that he gave away state secrets to a random, who was it, like an Israeli oh, guy?
Yeah, that's right.
An
yeah.
Israeli, or was it Israeli state secrets? It was Israeli yeah. state secrets.
That's what it was.
He compromised an Israeli agent just like yeah. randomly in his in his talking to diplomats.
Yeah.
This is not a president who cares about our national security particularly. No. So that is just a load of shit that he's using that's to right. delay the release of the Democratic memo.
Yeah. Also, Adam Schiff says that they had provided their memo to both the FBI and the DOJ before it was approved by the committee.
Do you think the DOJ would be the Department of God?
Oh, the DOJ?
Yeah. Do you think we're going to start one?
You down with DOJ? That makes me want to say that. I don't know why. Doesn't it?
Is that a rap that you learn in Christian places?
No.
Oh, what is
it's
it?
It's not.
Down
it's
with DOJ. Oh, is it like a Snoop Dogg rap? What is it?
Some sort of rap. Like, no. You down with
OPP, I thought maybe
OPP,
it was like a cool...
Right?
Oh, OPP is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I thought maybe it was like a cool spin on that.
No,
that
I think
like they're
people
doing,
are always
like,
changing those letters
doing.
Whenever it seems like it rhymes. And it made me want to do it too.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have been a youth pastor.
Dad thing to do, I feel like, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, you're practicing dad jokes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, so in any case, the Trump administration has directed the Justice Department to try to mitigate the risks identified by the
Right, exactly.
Like,
so they're
going to
work with
the Democrats
the, right,
to do that.
To fix it.
I don't know what we're fixing here because...
No. Well, we need to fix the length is what we need to fix.
Right. We also need to fix the fact that it refutes points made in the Republican memo, which
is
really
it
the bigger issue.
It was too political.
It was too political,
yes,
I believe he said.
Yeah,
yes.
Those were... Yeah, Trump tweeted, he said, the Democrats sent a very political and long response memo, which they knew because of sources and methods and more would have to be heavily redacted, whereupon somebody wrote this for him.
Obviously.
Whereupon they would blame the White House for lack of transparency, told them to redo and send back in proper form. The proper form, I believe, being much shorter and having some pictures in it,
probably.
Yeah.
And coming in the form of someone else describing it to him instead of him having to read it himself.
Exactly. I mean, it was 10 pages, so that's way too long. Like, we've talked on this podcast before about, like, how supposedly, like, everybody now knows that they are supposed to keep memos to one page.
Yes.
And also,
Trump's name in the
Yeah, that's what it is, because you have to get him to, like...
Want to pay attention.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, so you got to make sure you mention him a few times.
So they need to shorten it down, and they need to put his name in it more.
Yeah. Do you think that it matters if you have
I have a feeling his name was in it a lot.
I was going to say, actually. Do you think it matters if his name is in a place where it makes sense to put his name, or could you just arbitrarily sprinkle the word Trump throughout the memo and just... Like, what if everyone in the government just learned not to read the word Trump as they were reading documents?
Yeah,
like, they just sort of, like, zoned out on Trump.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
You could just add the word Trump anywhere.
Yeah.
Get him to read anything.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
one page.
Yeah, it's like I think they have one of those, like, Firefox or Chrome add-ons or whatever. Changes, they have one that changes Trump's face to cats. One of my coworkers was telling me about.
Oh my
that
God.
She has
that sounds amazing.
Used. So you can go to CNN.
It's just like cats.
It's cats everywhere.
And you know what? I, as someone who doesn't like cats,
feel like
that's an equivalent change, but
I
less
was
disturbing.
Say. Right, exactly.
Cats are cuter.
There was
than
one
Trump.
With puppies.
Oh my God. By the way, did you see the picture of his hair? Trump's hair,
which
not
one?
The cat's hair. There was a picture, someone took a screenshot of what had been video of him walking onto Air Force One.
Oh, from the back.
Yes,
I did see it, yes.
And
where there's no hair there.
I've been having nightmares about it.
Yeah, no, I know. It's terrifying.
Really disturbing.
Yeah.
I was going to add it to the doc, and then I was like, I don't think we should remind ourselves of this. But then I was just reminded of it anyway.
Yeah.
My own brain has been reminding me of it because it's that disturbing.
Yeah, go look at it.
Yeah, don't. If you don't want nightmares, don't bother.
Yeah.
The other big news of the week, as we hinted earlier, was the budget deal that passed late last week. With it's gone through Trump. It's gone through both houses.
Oh, it's law.
It's law, and it's a budget for it budgets
Two
us
years.
Through 2019. Yeah.
Yeah.
It budgets us through 2019. What am I talking about?
Whatever. You know.
We
don't do money.
Considering we've been basically running the government in like 2 month increments for
or less
years now. Or
Right, yeah.
Or less. This is a fairly sizable achievement. And
it is.
There were a few things that allowed this to happen. Yes. One being the Republicans literally just stopped listening to Donald Trump talk because he was going on like, I'm not going to sign anything that has this. I want this, right. this, and this. And they finally, when it suddenly became convenient for them,
yes.
Were like, oh, wait a minute. We don't have to listen to this guy. He'll right. just sign what we send him.
And that's exactly
true
what
story.
Happened.
Yeah. The other...
He wasn't super happy about it because he tweeted some garbage about like how we had to add a ton more spending than right. we wanted to because we need Dem votes yeah. and then was like, yeah, we have to elect more Republicans in 2018. Which, well, good luck.
But, yeah, exactly.
although maybe they'll have good luck because I feel like the Democrats are going to start jumping ship immediately because they really fucked this up. And I admit...
Brent
that I was wrong about this.
Texted
because
me this week and told me that I had won, which I love.
I really thought that they knew what they were doing here. And as you told me last week on the podcast, there should be nothing in our lifetimes that should have led me to believe that they did know what they were doing. And you were right about that.
So
what
true.
Was I thinking?
I don't know. You just got like oddly optimistic because it seemed like they had almost gotten the balls to do something.
It seemed like they really sort of like had the exact plan in place.
Yeah, except that it was a plan that you would have had as a thinking person.
Right.
But not a plan that they would have had as right. people that right. don't like to right. be successful.
I was even giving them credit for like reopening it the last time and having some foresight yeah. because they had managed to get a promise and like then they could do it again if they still hadn't voted on immigration and like then it would be Mitch McConnell's fault and it would be the president's fault and it would be like, but no.
No, nope. We just don't have an immigration bill.
Nope.
DACA's just heading towards expiration.
That's right.
There's already tons of people who are at risk of being deported
yep.
because a lot of them have had their status expire
That's
already.
Right. Yep.
And if they haven't had it expire yet, it will by March 5th.
It's coming.
So
that's not that's
all
weeks,
of those
weeks
1 year olds who had got taken across the border against their 1 year old wishes or without their 1 year old knowledge, who we paid taxpayer dollars to educate here and who now are important parts of American society. Suddenly at risk for being deported to yep. countries they've never been to.
That's right. Because the Democrats wanted some opioid spending.
Yeah. I have, at the end of this, a long rant to go on. But first, yeah. we're going to tell you what's in this deal.
Yeah.
So it has $300 billion in new spending.
Yeah.
Plus $90 billion in disaster aid. Now, we're not deficit hawks. So, like,
no.
that sounds like an exciting thing because not all of it was military spending.
That's right.
However, so... First of all, Rand Paul tried to filibuster it because it blows up the deficit.
Right, exactly. And so he, but everybody's mad at him though, too.
Yeah.
Because, well, here's the thing. The only people who like this are moderates that everybody hates,
right.
basically. Because the right is pissed off about this more than Rand Paul is pissed off about this. Now, they knew that doing some shenanigans like this and keeping the Senate there all night and
right.
up an
it's
extra
not-
9 hours was not gonna get anywhere, so they were all still pissed at him. But there are other senators who were like not super having this
yeah.
from the right because there are still deficit hawks. They're dwindling. But and then obviously people from the left were like, hello, immigration.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really sort of like loved by all, but so Rand Paul basically kept everybody there overnight on Friday and did cause the government to shut down for a few hours. And Charlie Dent, who is a Republican, like all the Republicans were pissed at him
yeah.
because it was like, it was sort of like a stunt for nothing other than like being a stunt.
Well,
because
the other
it was,
thing is that it was a stunt that allowed the sort of the cause of the shutdown headline to be a Republican and not Democrat.
Yes, that's true.
Which
right.
meant that
yeah, right,
they
yeah.
not only passed a bill, but also caused a shutdown. Like
right, exactly.
It was like they caused every piece of chaos that came into the news
right.
that day.
But Charlie Dent, who's a Republican, amazingly said, when Rand Paul pulls a stunt like this, it's easy to understand why it's difficult to be Rand Paul's next door neighbor. yeah,
oh,
Charlie
man.
Dent.
For those
it.
Of you who don't remember, yeah. Rand Paul and his next door neighbor were involved in a... A
yeah,
bit of
he was
a,
attacked by his next door neighbor, basically.
A bit of a situation.
Yeah. yeah
there,
yeah.
It was over, I think, yard care of some sort.
That's right.
And yeah. Rand Paul, in his own home, I believe, got
yeah.
attacked from behind by his next door neighbor.
That's right.
In
yeah.
his gated community in Bowling Green
yeah.
or something.
But
that,
if,
oh, yeah, because
right.
that was the real Bowling
That's
Green
what
massacre.
It was, the Bowling Green massacre, yeah.
yeah.
But it's important to talk about by why Rand Paul was upset. And it's not that you and I necessarily care, but it's important as
well,
it's important as Democrats to be able to tell Republicans when they tell you that they're being fiscally conservative that you can just sort of like punch them in the throat at that point. Because this is the thing that, and I've talked, this is one of my favorite things to talk about because it pisses me off to no end. Because Republicans do this all the damn time, every time they are in power. They talk about how they want to cut things, and they want to cut things, and they want to cut spending, and they want to cut taxes, and they want to cut. But all they ever do is actually cut taxes.
Right.
And they don't cut anything else. They cut some things that take up maybe – they cut some programs that take up like 2% of like the the federal budget,
they
basically.
They cut the programs that are most likely to directly impact you.
Well, right, exactly. But they don't really actually cut much in a way that is going to like, you know – able to make a dent in the deficit.
They also generally increase military spending enough to make up for the fact that they cut your social program that you relied on to live.
Yeah, exactly. Because we are now about to re-enter $1 trillion in annual deficit spending. And the last time that we had that was early in the Obama administration, because by his second term, he had cut those, he had cut deficit spending in half. And the only reason why he had $1 trillion deficit spending in the first part of his term was because he was still trying to get out of the disaster of the last GOP president that we had. So this is a thing that Republicans are doing literally every single time that they are in power. They blow up, and this is why the economy goes to shit whenever the it's why the Democrats have to be the ones who end up being the ones who are fiscally conservative when they would prefer to not be. But it's just because they have to clean this shit up.
Mm-hmm.
Because between this bill and the tax bill, which basically just like cut government funding because now nobody's paying any taxes any longer, we're back to $1 trillion deficit spending.
Yeah. Yeah, this.
So don't let any Republicans tell you that they're fiscally conservative, because clearly they're not.
No, they're.
And they never have been.
They never have been. They're the opposite of that. And this bill doesn't include any funding mechanisms at all.
No, of course not.
This is not.
It's just more spending.
This is literally more. So after.
The only thing Republicans have passed, literally, the two things that they have passed in the last year and however long, is a tax cut and a spending bill. So you do the fucking math.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Sorry.
Not surprisingly, everyone hates this bill.
Pisses me off. Yes.
Now, is it nice that it includes some spending that's not military spending?
Sure.
Absolutely, because it would have their preference would have been
only military spending.
And obviously, for those of us who don't love being at war, that wasn't ideal. And that is why Trump tweeted, "Without more Republicans in Congress, we were forced to increase spending on things we do not like or want in order to finally, after many years of depletion, take care of our military. Mm. Sadly, we needed some Dem votes for passage. Must elect more Republicans." I want to have a conversation about that comment. After Brent has gone on about what hypocrites Republicans are for being deficit hawks while they're deficit spenders.
Yeah.
I want to have a conversation about the things that they supposedly had to put in there for the Democrats in order to secure passage.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to tell you what those things were. Those things included, I believe, some infrastructure spending. I believe Donald Trump is the president of infrastructure spending. Is he not? Doesn't his infrastructure plan that's vague and doesn't have any actual plans
in
it?
And he's a Republican.
He's a Republican. The opioid crisis, which is a huge crisis in the Republican community.
Only going to Republicans.
It is basically only going to Republican
most
counties.
Most of that spending is going to West Virginia.
The crisis exists in rural and conservative-leaning white communities.
Right.
So those are going to Republican voters. That's money.
Right.
That's not Democratic spending. That's spending everyone wants. I'm not saying Democrats don't want money to face the opioid crisis, obviously, but that is not a gimme to Democrats. Republicans have been talking about that shit for years.
That's right.
Third of all, they put CHIP in there, which is great. Of course. I and 90% of Americans are in favor of CHIP.
Right.
So that is also not a Democratic priority. It's a Democratic priority. It's not a Democratic issue, though.
Yep.
It is a human person issue.
That's right.
Community health centers are another thing that, when you poll people, are massively popular.
That's right.
So that
also used mostly
in rural fucking
America.
Communities.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I take issue with the claim that any of the spend, because the things that we lost in the tax bill and the other kinds of spending that we have lost and the other policies that we have lost are Democratic priorities. We lost the mandate. Our health care costs are going to skyrocket in the next few years. And the reason they're going to skyrocket is because of a choice that was made in this tax bill that did not in any way address Democratic concerns.
Yeah.
We lost much more than we're gaining by, you know, generating spending on issues that 100% of people think we should be spending money on.
Yeah.
All Democrats think probably that we should address the opioid crisis, but I would contend that all Republicans think that too. If they don't think that, they certainly don't want to be reelected because it's their fucking communities that are being ravaged by this crisis. So I don't want to have a conversation about how they needed to have these things in there to get Democratic votes.
Right.
They need those to save their own seats, and they're fucking blaming Democrats for them.
Yeah.
So that was my rant.
Yeah.
Now, moving on. Mitch McConnell does claim that he is going to bring immigration up for a debate and a vote.
He seems like maybe he's sticking to his word, perhaps for the first time in forever. Although he's still
What does that mean? They don't have to. He hasn't promised a vote for anything.
Well, no, he has.
No, he hasn't. Well, he's promised to schedule the vote.
Well, there's a procedural vote to start debate tomorrow, which everyone seems to think is going to pass. And then he claims that he's not putting an end on amount of debate they're taking. He claims it's going to be a real freewheeling debate. Now, he could go back on that, but they are at least he's going to do what he claimed he was going to do.
Right.
So that is like, you know, it's barely more than nothing, but it's
exactly
he's at least doing the thing that he claimed that he was going to do, which was the concession that we claimed to have gotten out of him when we shut down the government the first
time. We've learned in the past, we can't know he's going to do anything until it's already been done.
Right.
So
correct.
That's,
and we also can't. And although can't he has recently
a Dream Act without the House.
And therein
lies the problem.
And that brings us actually to our next story.
That's right.
Too.
Did you, if you were near a television or Twitter, catch any of Nancy Pelosi's 8-hour filibuster?
It's amazing.
Because it got a surprisingly small amount of coverage for what I thought was a pretty astonishing stunt on her part. Not only because it is the only time I recall anyone holding the floor in the House to do
and
that
it's
kind
because
of thing.
Because she could only do it as
she's
like,
the minority leader.
Because the minority leader, and there's like something called like something weird, like the magic minute or something ridiculous, where like she can sort of basically, like,
there's only
she
a few people in the House who can hold the floor for as long as they want.
Right.
And she is one of them.
Right.
So she held, so this was like a talking filibuster, except you can't filibuster in the House.
Right.
And of course, none of the ones in the Senate are anymore anyway, so whatever. But she spoke for 8 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah, set the record.
She did it in 4-inch heels. She's in her late 70s.
Yeah.
I need to remind everyone.
I know.
And she spent the time telling stories of dreamers, basically.
That's right. She also said some prayers.
She dip into the green eggs and ham and recipe section of the filibuster, so that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The only person I know of who can keep a filibuster on target for 8 hours is Bernie Sanders.
That's right.
Everyone else falls into some kind of, like, has to talk about something unrelated for a while because...
Yeah. I would trust Bernie Sanders to speak on a few things to just literally until his death.
Yeah, no, I would too.
Because it's sort of what he does.
If Bernie Sanders could just hold the floor for the rest of his life...
Yeah, he could filibuster until the next presidential election.
Exactly.
If he had to.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't...
But she was, the reason that she was doing this was A, because she is trying to get, she sort of had to, because she's been catching some flack this week.
Yeah.
But also it was because she's trying to get Paul Ryan to do the same thing that Schumer was able to get McConnell to do. Because as people have been reminding everyone, that is that they're really the problem, because the House has, or the Senate has passed immigration before, and that we've been remembering that a lot over the last month. In 2013, they passed something, and it's literally just collecting dust somewhere.
Right. The House never even takes it up
it's
for a
not,
vote.
And so Pelosi is realizing that, or already realized that, obviously, but she's trying to get Paul Ryan to, and he sort of did, but he has always said that he will bring an immigration bill up on the House floor that the president supports. And, of course, the only thing the president supports is
building
a
wall and
trillions
not having...
of dollars for a damn wall.
Right.
So, like, that's not what anybody's looking for. But...
By the way, one of the people who's been most adamant about this in the House is Luis Gutierrez, who's an Illinois congressman. And last week, my mother has been reaming me out for this all week. Remember, we were talking about that seat where Lipinski, who's another Illinois representative, is being... He had a few people in his own party endorse his challenger in the primary.
Yeah.
And Luis Gutierrez was one of them.
Oh.
And we named him and we were like, I don't know, whatever, Luis Gutierrez. Oh. And my mom was like, Lila, I told you he should run for president so many times in 2016. How could you have forgotten Luis Gutierrez? He's a big advocate for dreamers and... immigration reform in general. And
sorry to Luis Gutierrez
and also to my mom, who was very offended by our lapse there. But he's been one of the people who's been most who's been the biggest DREAM Act advocates in the House and has been kind of a thorn in Pelosi's side on this issue because
And he said earlier in the week, he said that if Pelosi was going to support the newly crafted budget deal, it would be a complete betrayal.
Yeah.
And she's obviously been catching flack from, you know, the Hispanic caucus, the and just the left in general, who was like, you can't be supporting this because also she helped craft it, by the way.
Well, obviously. So,
but and she threatened to withhold votes from Democrats, and Paul Ryan knew that he was going to need votes from Democrats.
Yeah,
but this was
one of the
few times where she sort of couldn't deliver on that promise.
Here's
what
I'm
going to
say about that.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know that she's a beast and she could have delivered on that promise.
Right.
I don't think she wanted to deliver on that promise. I think this was a convenient time to not deliver on that promise.
She didn't want to be the one held responsible for shutting down the government.
The intention of this filibuster-ish speech, the intention of all of that stunt was not to not pass a budget.
I think you're absolutely right.
Like she was on the right side of history.
Totally.
So we know, based on years of experience, that if Nancy Pelosi wanted to withhold Democratic votes from that bill, she would have fucking done it.
Right, exactly.
She's not afraid.
She's not Paul Ryan.
She's not Paul Ryan.
Right.
She's effective. So I think that was maybe a convenient lapse.
Right.
But
she allowed the people who felt like that they had to vote for it to vote for it.
And, exactly.
Yeah.
She allowed the people with politics similar to her own to vote for it, is what she did.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, at least she tried something.
Yeah.
We have been seeing so many things tried in the Senate and so few things tried in the House. And none of the things tried in the Senate have ever come from Senate leadership, by the way. They've all come from randoms like Chris Murphy. But we never see the House do anything fun.
No,
so
that's right.
This was, I think, an exciting opportunity for at least that.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons it didn't get as much coverage while it was happening as it could have is because no one really knew that the House could do filibusters. So,
right. It's very confusing.
So I was like, Nancy Pelosi is doing a filibuster-style speech right now? What is happening?
I know.
What does that even mean?
I know.
It's like, is there a vote she's holding up or is she just talking?
No,
like, I couldn't even know. She was just talking.
Just Gavin. But it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to get anything done on DACA. Go figures, because they lost all of their leverage that they had. But even Lindsey Graham, who has been trying to get something done, said something to the effect this week that he felt like the only thing that they were going to do was maybe just delay, just extend DACA for like another year, which not even the Dreamers don't even want that. I mean, they would take it, obviously, so they are not getting deported in the next 3 weeks.
Exactly.
But like that just sort of like it can... continuing to just sort of like push that sort of like continues to keep their lives in flux.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I see them, it's
almost worse than to a degree.
The reason that I think that they might consider doing it is because it's such a bad look for midterms.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to do it permanently though. I think that he's right that if we see anything on DACA coming out of these Republicans, it's going to
be
a cynical attempt to not lose at all election.
Because they're not going to get a comprehensive immigration bill passed in the Senate that's going to be able to pass in the House and be signed by the president like before March 5th. Like that's just not life.
But also, I don't even think they need to do that. They need to make sure that Dreamers are protected.
No, they do. But like,
I know
they want to do
immigration reform. I'm not suggesting. I'm suggesting though that in order to A, fulfill this obligation to the Democrats, B, get everyone off their fucking neck, and C, be reelected to serve in office again.
Yeah.
There's a much narrower need than comprehensive immigration reform, and it's addressing this specific issue.
Yeah. No, I agree. All I'm saying is that if that is the only thing that they can get passed, it's not going to get people off their back in the way that they think that maybe it will.
No.
Like that's just because that's not a solution.
No, it's not a solution. I think they'll do it because it's a PR move.
Sure. Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
The DACA thing is a PR move for them. 85% of the country supports it.
Right, exactly.
It's not...
Yeah.
Comprehensive immigration reform is so much more complicated because the gang of whoever's in the gang
at the
number...
Well, if they wanted a PR move, then they should just send a clean DACA bill.
Exactly. But that's...
But they won't.
Like, they won't send a clean DACA bill. I feel like if they really wanted to protect themselves... they would do that and not address any of the other immigration
I don't know why. They just don't vote on it. Considering the amount of people who are in favor of it, it would, if they're all worried about 2018, it would behoove Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan to bring it up for a vote. It would pass both chambers because all of the Democrats would obviously vote for it. There's enough Republicans who would vote for it. Every single Democrat in the House would vote for it. And there's enough Republicans in the House that would vote for it. And
Except for Lipinski.
And then you're just forcing Trump to veto it, and I actually don't think that he would.
I don't think he would either.
I just, if it actually landed there for him, and he saw how, like, all of Earth was celebrating having had it passed out of Congress, he would get it signed.
Yeah.
He might not be super happy to do it. But
that's, I don't think...
It's not making sense that they're all just not getting that.
I don't think we should ever consider Donald Trump's position on anything when we consider whether or not we're going to take votes on it.
I agree.
I think we could get him to vote on whatever we felt like.
Same.
Especially now, because the entire West Wing is in crisis mode. Right. Six senior officials inside the executive branch have resigned between Wednesday and Friday of this week. Two of them over domestic abuse allegations.
Yeah, that's right.
The first being Rob Porter.
Yes.
The Daily Mail broke a story that the White House staff secretary, Rob Porter, had been accused of domestic abuse by two ex-wives. Mm, and also, I think a third woman has come forward who is not his ex-wife.
Yeah.
That was like a huge news scandal. We were trying to figure out who knew what when and who and whether he had been fired or resigned, and whether what Trump thought of the whole situation.
Right, exactly.
Newsflash, Trump was not bothered by
it. Thought he was a great guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then also David Sorensen, who is a White House speechwriter, also had to resign over
the same reason.
Domestic abuse.
Yeah.
And then another official from the White House resigned, and people in the Justice Department have resigned. I mean, like, it's been chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah. This week.
We're going to get to the justice resignation
that's an exciting one.
Because, like, that's a potentially crazy one.
But this Rob Porter one has been really interesting because Trump it's like another situation where Trump keeps getting on TV and putting his foot in his mouth. Like, remember after Charlottesville where he first apologized and then went back on his apology?
Yes.
He got on TV to talk about the Porter firing and was sort of like supposed to go on and be like, we hate him and blah, blah, blah. And instead went on TV and talked about how wonderful he was and how he wishes him the best of luck in his future career.
Right.
And then tweeted, so many positive things going on for the USA and the fake news media just doesn't want to go there. Same negative stories over and over again. That's because everyone in his purview is a fucking wife beater.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, there are people in the White House who are not wife beaters, I would assume, who are like mad about this, A, because they don't want wife beaters in the White House, and B, because it's just another thing that is like causing them to like lurch from, you know, one
crisis
bit
crisis.
Of crisis. Yeah, exactly.
They passed a budget deal this week, and the biggest news was Rob Porter.
Right, exactly. They couldn't even talk about that.
That has been very exciting, but also the fallout of that scandal has been mostly with
John Kelly, the chief of staff, who many are claiming has known about it for months.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he gave a speech to White House staff saying he had fired fired Porter within 40 minutes of discovering the severity of the allegations, but when he knew about the allegations is now an open question. And everyone's timeline keeps shifting.
There also aren't different severities of domestic abuse. I mean, I realize there are technically, but like when it comes to this, like politically, there's no difference in different types of domestic abuse. Like if he knew anything, even if he didn't know the details of it, it doesn't matter what the details were.
No,
right?
Not in a political
context. Like not in a political context. Like, yes, it matters for the women and it matters for law enforcement. And like, I get that it matters, but like, They don't matter as to whether, if you know, whether you should be firing or not. Because the answer is yes, you should have been.
Yeah. And he's not the only person inside the White House who knew. Because Don McGahn, the chief counsel, he also knew. And nobody seems to know when he knew or why he knew and how he knew. Yeah. But
Well, they were both busy covering it up.
Yeah, exactly. Kelly has not appeared in public to address any of these allegations.
Yeah.
And then Kellyanne Conway was asked by the press about this and said, ask him in person. But the press can't actually get in touch with him. They can't find him. So
well, there's been stories that he has offered to resign. But the White House is claiming that that is not accurate. But
well, and there's also been stories about whether or not he's on Trump's shit list. Because there's been a lot of discussion about whether he's going to be fired or not.
Yeah.
That has been sort of in the, you know, ether for a while, but kind of came to a head when this story broke.
Yeah, because, like, new names for this job have been, like, in the news lately. So, like, this is not, like, this chatter has been going prior to this whole Portman situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, though, there's no internal pressure on him to resign over this, and I believe that. I believe right. that there's anger at him for a number of things, but that his sure. support of Rob Porter is not this one of is those not things. One of them.
Yeah.
Because all of them, all they can only think of nice things to say about Rob Porter. No one has said anything but wonderful things about him.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
The only things we know about him are that John Kelly and Donald Trump think he's a wonderful man.
Right.
And that he definitely beat two of his wives and maybe a third woman as well.
Yeah. That's like, not a great guy.
That can't be the same.
It's not a recipe for a great guy.
No, it's not the recipe. So, and then there was another interesting resignation, and we're going to explain to you why it's interesting because it takes a while to get there.
Yeah. And it's not normally the type of job that if someone resigned from, anyone would have to care about.
Right. We're talking about Rachel Brand. She's Rod Rosenstein's second in command.
Right.
So she's the associate attorney general. Third highest office in the Justice Department.
Right.
And she's only been there for 9 months. She's resigning to take a job with Walmart. My parents have been joking all week that she would rather be a Walmart greeter than work in this White House. But also, she's resigning to protect her career, let's be honest.
Sure, what's going on? Of course.
Yeah. So obviously...
She's also making presumably way more money doing whatever she's doing at Walmart. Yeah. So.
This wouldn't normally make any headlines, except that it really matters a great deal to the future of the Russia investigation.
Yes.
So by default, she has a temporary successor who would be the acting associate attorney general, who is her principal deputy, Jesse Pinuccio. The president can choose anyone to serve in that position instead of Pinuccio on a temporary basis for up to 210 days, but he has to choose from people that have already had Senate confirmation hearings for something, so he can really only choose amongst other appointed positions in his own cabinet.
Yeah.
He's free to nominate anyone to replace her, but they have to get through a Senate confirmation process, and because she's Rod Rosenstein's second in command, that could get very dicey.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, because Pinuccio is not Senate confirmed, he could not take the place of Attorney General or Deputy Attorney General, which is Rod Rosenstein's job, if those offices were become vacant. That means that if Jeff Sessions left or if Rod Rosenstein resigned but was actually fired, as we are worried about happening because there's been a lot of chatter about that recently.
Right, exactly. And he's overseeing this, as we know, because Sessions has recused himself. Right. Just to catch you up to speed.
Rod Rosenstein is overseeing the Mueller investigation.
Right.
Sessions has recused himself. It means that Pinuccio would not be able to oversee those investigations if he were to, you know, if something were to happen to Rod Rosenstein after he had been elevated into Rachel Brand's job.
Right.
It also, though, so Rod Rosenstein is who authorized the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
But what we learned during Watergate is the political fallout of ending an investigation like this has a direct relationship to the number of people who have to leave their jobs in order to prevent you from doing that.
Sure.
So when the Saturday Night Massacre happened, like, a bunch of people resigned rather than end the Watergate investigation.
Yes, that's what happened. And he basically sort of, like, and Nixon went around to basically everybody to, and instead of doing what he wanted them to do, they all just resigned.
Exactly.
And then he just kept going down the line until he finally found somebody to do his handiwork for him.
So, but the more people who resigned, the more dramatic it became politically.
Right.
The problem here is that if we compress the possible needed resignations to get to the end of the Mueller investigation to only one or two people, we have a much less politically combustible situation Trump choose to end the investigation, which is why it is important that these positions be filled.
Yes.
And also be filled with people who care about the rule
of law. Because if he can just appoint anybody who's been confirmed for something that sort of is open to ending this investigation, then... And for 210 days, that's quite a long time. And
I'm hoping
Rosenstein is already sort of like in the crosshairs of the administration, supposedly. So, we're inching ever closer to, you know, Trump being able to have somebody there who would just shut this down.
And we're accidentally inching closer to him paying a smaller political cost for it than he should.
Right.
That's not on him, though.
No.
He doesn't know that that's the case.
No.
That's a secret we're telling you to keep your eyes out. I hope Rosenstein is just like, I'm going to fucking stay in this job if it's miserable.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you tell me to resign, I'm going to make you fire me.
Right.
Because I think it's much more dramatic if he fires Rosenstein.
Him, I agree.
If Rosenstein resigns, which is usually how it's done in government positions where everyone wants to be gentlemanly, then that's one thing. If he is fired, then that, I think, will start its own firestorm.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But so in any case, keep your eye on this situation. It's also a bad sign that someone would need to leave 9 months into their tenure at the Justice Department to protect their career, which is what most people believe she's doing here.
Yeah.
So that's not great news.
Yeah.
But there's some good news, too.
Yeah.
We have good news also.
Yeah.
The Democrats have been really cleaning up in statewide special or state-level special elections.
Yeah. They've flipped a ton.
Yeah. And so we had a couple weeks ago, there was a race in Wisconsin, and we'll talk about that in a second. But this week in Missouri, they had some crazy swings in a state house district, state house races.
Yeah.
There was District 97, where they flipped the district. They won by 3 points, and it was a 31-point swing.
Yeah, Trump won by 28 points,
yeah,
that district.
And this is the Democrats' 35th red to blue legislative flip at the state level, and only the Republicans have only done four.
Yeah.
But also, that wasn't even the biggest swing of the night, because also in Missouri, in House District 144, there was a district where it swung by 59 points.
59 points.
And the Democrats still lost somehow, because that's the kind of world we're living in.
I don't even understand how the math works there.
I know. They lost 53-47, but the district swung 59 points?
Sure.
That's wild. And then there was another district where it swung 18 points and another where it swung 25 points.
Yeah.
They did not win any of those districts, but that does not portend great things.
These are
deeply Republican seats that
Claire
are seeing
McCaskill
huge.
Slept great that night.
Yes, for probably the first time in her life. But it's also having some other implications. So we said that the same thing had happened in Wisconsin recently. And as a result, Scott Walker has been leaving vacant seats empty instead of calling for special elections for them, because they don't want the seats to flip.
Yeah.
And Pennsylvania's about to have a bunch of special house races, so they're worried about that. And the GOP leadership is letting Blake Fahrenthold, who we remember paid off a woman $84,000 in a sexual harassment
suit, because he didn't pay her off.
Oh, yeah, they used public money.
And he has promised to pay that money back and has not.
Yeah, but they're letting him keep his seat because they're afraid the seat will flip.
Yeah.
So I don't. Why did we have to lose Franken again? Can you tell me?
Nope, can't.
Nope.
Couldn't at the time. Certainly can't do it now.
No. But anyway, according to a spreadsheet that the Daily Coast compiled, in 2017, there were 70 special elections. Democrats ran 10 points ahead of Clinton and 7 points ahead of Obama's 2012 results.
Yep.
In 2018, there have been 9 races so far. Democrats are running 27 points ahead of Clinton and 12 points ahead of Obama.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That is crazy.
Those are huge margins.
Yeah.
Not that we're not going to run 27 points ahead in every district. I'm not claiming that.
No.
But if we're seeing in Republican districts swings that massive, then what we're seeing is that people are not enchanted with this administration.
That's correct.
And the numbers also bear that out, because they have a rock bottom approval rating.
Right, exactly. And that is sort of like the only thing that like gives me hope for 2018, because like I've been sort of, you know, I think we talked last week on this podcast, but I read something else this week, basically just some sort of think piece that was like raking the Democrats over the coals for this budget deal that they struck, that their numbers in a generic congressional polling continue to go down and down and down. And that's because they're not up to anything good in Congress.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But I feel like it's, despite them being terrible at their job, and I realize that them being better at their job would probably help out their poll numbers a little bit, but it's really sort of like, it's the grassroots here that is driving all of these things, and I think they're going to continue to drive them in 2018.
Yeah.
They need some excitement, obviously, and like, we're like not giving them a ton of reasons to be excited right now, so that's a problem, but I still feel pretty good about
that. I was going to say, I think the races that the National Party has less interest in and less to do with and receive less attention because the National Party's not involved
are going to be running much better than.
I think it's the National Party's attention that seems to kill races because they end up going in for the wrong candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, let people locally, you know, and these local races, people probably are choosing their own candidates, which they're not able to do in major national races. So, in any case. That's something to hold on to in this bleak time of of budget deals and Donald Trump.
That's right.
Sexual harassment scandals. Another sign. I don't think this is a promising sign necessarily, but it's a sign that people are ready for change in Kansas.
That's right.
There are 6 teenagers running for governor in Kansas right now.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, Kansas is one of only 2 states that has no minimum for age minimum for running for governor. The other being Vermont, oddly, where a 13-year-old ran in the last race for governor.
Yeah. But I have a feeling Vermont sort of like did it for some sort of
egalitarian purpose.
Right, exactly. And I have a feeling that Kansas just forgot.
Yeah, they're careless. Right. They just did it to be careless.
Yeah.
And when we say teenagers, we're talking about teenagers under 18, not people who are old enough to vote.
Right.
But So in any case, there is a bill now that's being introduced by a GOP state rep that would require candidates to be at least 18.
Right, but it wouldn't take effect until after 2018. Right. And that's basically just because they don't want to be seen as like
a joke,
totally shutting this down. Like, because it's not a good look for them. Like, even though most everybody sort of like thinks that it's fairly ridiculous, there's a bunch of 16 and 17 year olds running for governor. It's also not great to like retroactively just be like, oh no, you
we
can't
can
do
decide
that just
who can
because,
and can't
right,
run.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
the first teen to announce.
They're just going to have to hope that none of them win.
The first teen to announce was a 16 year old named Jack Bergeson, who in true confusing
politics.
Kansas style has some very interesting politics. He supports higher minimum wages, high speed rail, and open carry laws.
Yeah, sure.
Go Kansas.
You know?
Three more teens declared after him, all Republicans.
All
Republicans. And then the four of them held a forum at a high school in October to answer questions.
Sure.
The thing that they all kind of agreed on was that we need to in some way decriminalize marijuana.
Sure.
The teenage caucus. Yeah. Then one declared it as an independent, and then another Republican teen jumped in.
So there's six now.
There's six now. Five Republicans and one independent. Mm-hmm. I want to point out that only
one Democrat.
No, one independent.
Oh, I thought the open carry kid was running for Democrat.
No, I don't think he is.
Oh, he's not? Oh, interesting. Okay. Right.
I could be wrong. In any case, there's only one woman running for governor in Kansas. There are six teenage boys running and one woman.
Yeah.
That's what Kansas is up to.
Thankfully, she's a Democrat.
Right. Yeah, that's true. In
still,
Kansas, you never know.
Should
but
be doing better there.
Adult woman.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Well, there's one adult woman.
Right. Here. And the thing that is sort of like a little crazy about that is that Kansas is open to electing a woman governor.
Yeah.
Kathleen Sebelius was the governor of Kansas for a long time.
Yeah.
And everybody loved her.
Yeah.
She worked in the Obama administration after that. So Kansas will elect
women.
Women.
They have to run, though.
To statewide office, but they got to be there.
Kansas, though, has gone backwards tremendously since Sebelius was the governor there.
Right.
Sam Brownback has.
I know. But like in Iowa, as much as I love my home state, I would be concerned if they were running a woman because they haven't elected very many women to statewide office, and they've all been terrible.
You have Joni Ernst,
so,
Brent.
What
are you complaining
about? I know. Yes. So,
in fact,
I think the, because now our current, who should be our current governor, is now the ambassador to China.
Oh, right.
And his lieutenant governor is a woman, and she's running for governor. And I think we have a governor's race in 2018 as well. So,
has California had a female governor? I don't think so.
Oh, I don't know. No, but we've had, but Joni Ernst was the first woman
to be elected
statewide
office. Yeah.
In Iowa, which is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had two female senators
for years. Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In any case, that's what's happening in Kansas. Not surprising. And now we're on to our Olympics section.
Yeah. Here we go.
Here's our first important Olympics update that we learned while we were pulling stories for this article. Or for this podcast.
Yeah.
Apparently, this is the kind of reporting that's going on at NBC. They did an entire package on whether blue is the fastest color.
That's right. Based on science.
Based on science. But not really based on science.
Some scientist in a country that is good at speed skating has decided that blue is the fastest color. So now they're all wearing blue.
Yeah.
Their uniforms are blue.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
Arguably a bigger story was that the Koreas marched together at the opening ceremonies.
Sure. Fair enough.
But we thought we'd lead with that one anyway.
Sure. Well, because it's fresh in our brains because we just saw it 2 hours ago and we were both incredulous about it. So.
Exactly. but so the big story coming out of the opening ceremony was that the Koreas marched together. This
That's
is actually
right.
the second time they've done this. So good luck this time also.
I
don't know how well it worked last time.
Yeah.
And apparently the first time they did it in like the world, it made a big splash because it was at a ping pong tournament. Which is arguably the most important thing, Asian sport, that there is. So,
yeah, it is.
But the biggest news coming out of the opening ceremony was Kim Jong-un's sister.
That's right.
Kim Yo-jong.
Yeah.
Who was sent down to go on a charm offensive
that is
working too well.
It is.
And the reason it's working so well is not really because she's been so charming, although she's been fine.
Right, it's because they sat her next to the least charming person on Earth. Our vice president.
Yeah. So she's never said a word in public. But she's, as the Times put it, managed to, quote, outflank Mike Pence in the game of diplomatic image making.
By literally standing and clapping.
Yeah.
That's all she did.
And
she
they've been calling her North Korea's Ivanka, which I love.
I know.
Also, my favorite part of this before we move on.
She has the Nicole Kidman clap.
Did
you notice that?
I
where
did.
She like parts
it's
her
very
fingers
dainty
in a very
clap.
Odd way that doesn't really make any sense.
No one knows her real age, so news outlets have been saying that she's believed to be 30.
It seems about right.
She could be any
I mean,
age. Nobody knows. Like, how would we know? If we don't know her age, we don't know her age.
That's true.
She could be of any age.
Yeah.
But so it all started before the opening ceremonies, where there was an awkward handshake debacle where Mike Pence was brought into a room of dignitaries that included her.
Yeah.
And went and shook everyone's hand but hers, like markedly.
Yeah.
Like went around a table shaking the hands of everyone at the table except her.
Well, and was that just because his wife wasn't there?
Well, I asked the same question.
Right.
I believe she was the only woman at the table. I might be mistaken about that. But also, like, what a douche. If we had a State Department that hadn't run into the ground without his wife there,
he couldn't go up and speak to her without immediately wanting to have sex with her.
Well, exactly. No, I mean, that's...
because that's...
that's science.
That's right. Exactly.
Without a State Department that isn't completely gutted by their incompetence, he was unable to know that that's like a diplomatic no-no, apparently.
Right.
Meanwhile, she's like offering to the president of South Korea to come visit the North, like suddenly extending all of these offers and going on about how they're going to all work together and blah, blah,
maybe
blah.
Maybe to put him in a political prison. We don't know.
It doesn't matter. She comes off looking like a fucking hero,
right.
And Mike Pence looks like the asshat who won't fucking shake her hand.
Right.
But then the other thing that drew a lot of attention was he refused to attend a dinner that Mr. Moon, the president of South Korea, was hosting before the opening ceremony. And then some genius seated him directly in front of Kim Yo-jong at the opening ceremonies. So when the Koreas marched in together, unified, and everyone in the stadium stood, he was the only person with his wife not standing.
Yeah. And there he was. There was no way for him to escape being in the shot.
He had to be in the shot because he was standing right in front of her.
Yeah.
So every time that there
the
was a shot.
The geniuses in charge of the seating assignment at the opening ceremonies should win a damn prize.
They might be North Korean geniuses because it seemed like the most genius North Korean propaganda win in history.
I know.
Because this was not just not clapping for North Korea. This was also not clapping for our ally, South Korea, who was hosting the games. This is not clapping for the host's Olympic team.
Yeah.
That is rude.
Right. And also, it's not like we don't have ill will to the 20 athletes from North Korea who work there. I mean, it's such a ridiculous, decision to have made.
Well, and this makes clear that the Trump administration is not interested in developing peace in Korea.
Right.
They are interested in developing war.
Right.
Because if they cannot stand for a gesture of goodwill and community, but they can, you know, talk shit about North Korea to, quote, support South Korea, then they are not interested in the people of South Korea or the peace process in general.
Right.
Because this was a great opportunity to make some informal peace wins.
Right.
He had an informal environment to talk to the North Korea to emissaries from the North Korean government
Which we've been claiming that we're trying to do.
Exactly.
Rex Tillerson claims that we're trying to have channels to talk to them.
Exactly.
Like being at a dinner table with one seems like a pretty solid channel.
It's a very easy one. You could talk about things you have in common and then talk about peace.
Right.
It doesn't even have to be an awkward meeting where you're in front of cameras and you have to shake hands awkwardly and Donald Trump accidentally pulls you towards him in an awkward way because he doesn't know how to shake a hand.
Yeah.
There was a lot of controversy in South Korea about whether Mr. Moon was falling for the charm, you know, was being wooed by a charm offensive.
We would be sort of remiss to mention that there are a lot of people who think that this whole thing is, a big clever ruse.
Yeah,
to,
it might be.
You know, and maybe it is.
I would rather fall for a ruse that is potentially in the interest of peace than be aggressive towards a ruse because we could be rusing them back.
Right, exactly.
Maybe if we all just pretend we get along, that's enough.
Then magically you do.
Right.
I mean, that's how you get along
with people.
That's
how you get along with people. There's plenty of people I don't actually like that I am just polite to so that they will be polite to me and neither of us get punched in the face at the
end of
the day.
They're called coworkers.
Exactly. So it doesn't make any sense to react this way, even if we are being wooed by a fake charm offensive.
Right, exactly.
We don't have to agree to give them anything.
No.
But
just give them one back.
Yeah, exactly. Charm them back.
Yeah.
Shaking hands doesn't cost any country anything.
No, it doesn't.
So in any case, one hilarious social media footnote is that Kim Yo-jong attended that luncheon at the Presidential Palace on Saturday, and they released photographs of her writing a message that said, Pyongyang and Seoul get closer in our people's hearts. And social media went nuts dissecting her handwriting. Apparently her handwriting was, like, really weird. I wouldn't know because I don't read Korean.
No.
But apparently Koreans went nuts on social media because she had really bizarre handwriting.
Fascinating.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Oh, it is.
She's already gone back to North Korea.
Sure.
But in any case, you can't be losing a charm offensive to North Korea.
Nope.
You can't be doing that, Mike Pence.
Uh-uh.
Don't send Mike Pence. Send literally any other person from the government. Donald Trump would have done better in this situation.
Well, none of the Olympians wanted him there anyway.
No, exactly. But I mean, I literally think Donald Trump would have done better in that situation.
Yeah, he would have accidentally shaken her hand. He would have shaken her hand. Just because he loves a good handshaking opportunity.
He likes to charm people. Yeah. That's his only skill. That's yeah. It's like, who was it? It wasn't...
yeah, people like him when they meet him.
Was it Molly Ivins or Gail Collins or somebody who wrote that article about how he had called her like a horrible cunt or something, like, and because she had written a critical article of him and, you know, like sent her a picture of his hand or like something crazy. And she said... The thing about him is the next time I saw him, he was perfectly charming. Right, if in person, he can't. That's why he says yes to everyone.
Right.
He wants you to like him.
Yeah.
So he would have done better
and
in this
situation.
And people
like him.
People. Yeah, exactly. Like he would have done better than Mike Pence in this situation. Agreed. This is like when Mike Pence tried to. First of all, the irony of him sitting in protest for an event that was having a political message that was unrelated to the event while he was too busy hating on football players for doing the same was not lost on the internet.
No.
That Colts game came back to haunt him in a big way.
It did.
But in any case, before we go, let's talk, A, about the guy from Tonga.
Yes.
I'm not going to even talk to you about his coconut-oiled, muscled body. You saw it. I get it. I mean, we all saw it. We've seen it now for two Olympics in a row.
Yeah.
It's a great addition to the Olympic Parade of Nations.
In private on my iPad since the opening ceremonies a few times.
That's fine. I want to talk more about how he appeared at the Summer Olympics in Rio and then this Olympics.
Yeah.
And the way that he accomplished this was not just by being a guy who could march shirtless through a stadium.
This guy is a superhuman.
He's a superhuman.
Because he competed in 2016.
In Taekwondo.
Yeah, exactly.
Guess what he's competing in the Winter Olympics.
Yeah. It's cross-country skiing.
Come on.
A man who had seen snow once decided after the 2016 games, hey, I would like to go to the next
Olympics.
They're great. I will take up cross-country skiing. And if you think that, if you're thinking to yourself, oh, well, he's just a guy from Tonga that has no people. And so he decided to take up the sport. And then, like, he became the best person in that country at that sport and then can automatically go to the Olympics. That's not how the Olympics totally work. Because
you,
you still have to qualify as part of, like, a sort of, like, broader... Like, you have to, he has to get a certain time to be able to still go to the Olympics. It's like how you, it's like the Boston Marathon. You can't just, like, show up and just, like, run the thing.
Right.
Like, you have to have, so he has, in the last, in the last 2 years, he has become an Olympic quality
cross-country
skier as a person who had never seen snow and a person competing in Taekwondo.
That's fucking nuts.
That's crazy, you guys.
That's what the Olympics is all about.
I guess.
It's ridiculous people from Tonga.
That's right.
Who are winning at everything.
Coconut oil in like 0 degree temperature.
Why not?
I'm glad he made that
He's superhuman. I mean, it was the right choice.
Yeah.
Also, what does Tonga wear to the Winter Olympics? It's not I get like Norway could wear like a coat and you're like, well, that's what you wear in Norway. Like, there's not like a traditional warm hat worn in Tonga.
It's also really exciting to watch the parade of ceremonies for all of those crazy countries that have like two athletes, because every single one of those countries, those athletes are American.
Yes.
Or in some cases, there were some French athletes. Right. There were some, they're all populated by people who could not make their own national team.
Yes. and exclusively by people who are from places that are cold. Because the other thing about, it's like, like the Nigerian bobsledders.
God bless them. They're all Americans.
Now, is it wonderful that, because I've often wondered why, after that whole Jamaican bobsled team situation happened, I've often wondered why more sprinters don't get into bobsled. It's basically a sprinting sprinters. Sport.
Yeah.
It is a sprinting sport.
Yeah, well, Lolo Jones took the note.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
But so I've never understood why the entire Southern Hemisphere doesn't just get into bobsledding.
Right, yeah.
They produce great sprinters a lot of the time.
Yeah, they do.
But in any case, a few Americans, industrious Americans, who I guess had access to the idea of bobsledding, were able to make that happen and qualify for Nigeria because, again, we have a bobsled program, I guess, in America.
And that's how a lot of sports get started in countries like this. So I'm not dismissing it because, like, now maybe Nigeria is a country that, like, all of a sudden, like,
we'll have a bobsled program.
Has bobsleds. And, like,
And if Nigeria is a country that's producing sprinters, then it should be a country that can also go to the Winter Olympics.
It might take some Americans whose parents had some sort of relation to Nigeria to, like, get that started. In that case, that's good. But, like,
my favorite stories of people repping countries they're not from is twofold. One is that there is a four-time Olympian athlete from Colorado repping Mexico because her husband is Mexican and she's in her like 50s or something.
There's a lot of winter sports.
The other is that
50s, the
arguably the best pair skating team in the world is a German team that has a that is a French man and a Ukrainian woman competing for Germany.
Yeah. Well, you and when we watched the Lyle and I, of course, watched the European Figure Skating Championships a couple weeks ago because
we're not fools.
Yeah, exactly. And every single one of those pairs teams had at least one person that was not from the country they were competing for. Many of them Americans.
With pairs teams, it's hard.
Yeah.
Korea's ice dance team has a white guy on it. I mean, it's difficult because you have to find a partner on the scene. Oftentimes, you're basically like making a deal, like you're negotiating for partners.
Yeah. And there's no good male pair skaters in the U.S. That's why so many of those European pairs skaters had like an American woman on them.
Yeah.
And you can tell by watching our pairs team because it's always. What's his ass? Who's the one who's fallen on their side-by-side jumps?
Yeah.
He's having trouble, like, skating from point A to point B upright oftentimes.
Yeah.
And they're married. Apparently, you have to marry your husband to nab a partner in America.
It's crazy because we have such great ice dancers here.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, what, like, no one can find anyone to train a pairs team in this country when the entire...
No.
Every pairs team has an American on it. If they don't have a Russian. If you're smarter, you take a Russian.
That's what you do.
You know, if you want to win, you take a Russian.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you just want to compete, like Israel's pair team was a Russian guy and an American woman.
Yeah.
And it's funny how they always say it. Like, they'll be like, so-and-so is from blah, 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 and trains in Boston and blah, blah, blah.
Right. I know.
Like, they never mention that they're not actually, like, have no relation to the country.
Well, because every ice dance team on Earth is, like, currently from Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they all train in the same place.
Right, yeah.
Although, did you know that Moyer and what's-her-face?
Virtue.
Virtue and Moyer left that coach and are now training different because they felt they were always getting second fiddle to Charlie White and Merrill Davis. Yeah, even though they're not competing anymore.
They're not, no.
But ice dancing is today, and we couldn't be more excited.
It's the shib-sibs.
The shib-sibs.
That's what everybody's calling them, by the way. I've always thought
they were great, though.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're really fun, even though it's like weird that they're siblings.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
But I've always thought that they handle it well.
Yeah.
They don't dance a lot of love stories together.
They don't.
They don't do
anything too sexy.
Yeah, thank God. They had to do a Latin dance for the short program, and I was kind of like, I don't know, but it was fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, today is when the team competition medals are given out, and then we're on to
We're going to get our first look at our dear friend Adam Rippon tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's skating the long program.
I know, because Nathan Chen really fucked up the short program.
That was a big yikes moment. Because a lot of people think he's going to win, but that was not the way to go.
No. Well, he was his first time. He's young. What are you going to do? In any case, that's the news.
Yeah.
We will be back next week when we'll have more updates on figure skating and possibly some politics.
That's right.
We'll talk to you then.
Bye.